Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
$800 billion. I think we have to say that again. $800 billion and counting for an industry that is still growing in size is impressive.
Todd Kirsten, thank you for joining me this week.
Great to be with you, Nate. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Kirsten,
my pleasure.
You may or may not recall, Kirsten, but you and I have actually interacted previously in your role at CNBC, right? It's a small world, and so I'm certainly familiar with what you were doing. But for our listeners, just tell us a little bit more about your background and now your current role over at Vettafi.
Sure. Yeah, so as you mentioned, I was at CNBC for more than a decade. I wore various producer hats while I was there, and I worked with a very colorful cast of characters, starting out on CNBC's morning show, Squawk Box, with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, before moving on to join, of course, Bob Pisani, our senior stocks correspondent, on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And so I had the privilege of witnessing the sort of beating heart of the stock market come to life firsthand. You know, we talked to traders every day. We took the pulse of what was going on, and of seeing wealth creation in the form of IPOs and, of course, the rapid rise of the ETF business. And it was about 6 years ago, six or seven, that Bob and I started up CNBC's weekly ETF Edge show, which you just mentioned. You and Todd know very well, both been frequent guests on. So now I'm thrilled to be joining Vettafi and to stay knee-deep in the ETF game. So I'll be part of the research team writing and putting out content on topical trends, eventually helping to moderate some of our many live webcasts to help educate RIAs and investors about what products are out there, and at the same time help issuers understand what investors want to see more of. You know, at CNBC, Vettafi was one of our go-to sources, and both Todd and Tom Lydon have been our Swiss Army knives as far as being able to cover anything and everything ETF. So it's great to be part of the team now.
You mentioned Bob Pisani. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Bob is actually one of the finalists for ETF.com's Lifetime Achievement Award. I'm just curious, what was that like working alongside him? I have to imagine that was a fantastic experience for you.
Oh, it was amazing. Yes. You know, Bob is the ultimate bon vivant. I've learned as much from him about cocktails, fine dining, and world travel as I have probably about investing in the stock market. He's got this insatiable curiosity. He never misses a chance to impart his wisdom. And as far as investing goes, he always likes to remind people, investors and producers alike, don't yell at the stock market. That's one of his maxims. You know, you're not the lone genius that sees the coming catastrophe. That's from his book, Shut Up and Keep Talking. And when dining with traders, always stay one drink behind and shut up.
Always good advice. So I was looking, you're already off to a very fast start at Vettafi. I saw you publish two pieces recently, including one today, and I thought we might briefly touch on both of those. The first one was a look at first quarter ETF flows. You called this the ETF flowdown, which I love that. Mm-hmm. And you highlighted several areas. So let me rattle these off real quick. You noted the flows into the largest S&P 500 ETFs, so ticker VU and IVV. You noted the flows into SPLG, which is also an S&P 500 ETF, but it's the cheapest one, and that made the flow leaderboard, even though it's significantly smaller than the other S&P 500 ETFs in terms of assets. You also highlighted the appetite for large-cap, high-duration growth with an ETF like Invesco's QQQ. And then finally, you touched on spot Bitcoin ETFs, which had two of the top six ETFs overall in terms of inflows with IBIT and FBTC. And you also noted flows into active ETFs, such as the BlackRock U.S. Equity Factor Rotation ETF, ticker DYNF. Obviously, there's a lot here. I would love to have you maybe pick one of those stories and just offer a bit more color. Like, is there one that you find particularly interesting or perhaps you think has more staying power as we look ahead to the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I just want to highlight, you mentioned active ETFs. You know, we saw record net inflows in the first quarter there. I mentioned in my piece BlackRock's U.S. Equity Factor Rotation, that's DYNF, and that was the most popular actively managed ETF in the first quarter. But we're also seeing lots of covered call demand in the form of net inflows into products like JEPI, J.P. Morgan Equity Premium Income ETF, JEPI, and, of course, JEPQ, that's the J.P. Morgan NASDAQ Equity Premium Income ETF. particularly with those covered call overlays, I think that has some real staying power. The strong demand we've seen makes perfect sense there because the market right now is trading near all-time highs. Valuations are stretched. You know, if the market stays in that sort of broad uptrend, that fat and flat trading range, if you will, for investors who want to stay in the market, they want to keep collecting those call premiums to generate that additional income.
Todd, I know that you're just chomping at the bit here. Do you want to chime in on any of those flow stories or even what Kirsten just highlighted?
Well, I can't believe you're keeping you're holding back a bit because I know you're skeptical about covered call demand persisting. So I'm going to just drive right past that. I'm also going to drive past the spot Bitcoin ETFs because I know we've covered that quite a bit. I would just highlight, you shouted out SPLG. I want to shout that out again. This is the cheapest of those S&P 500 ETFs, but for a while, it still took a challenge for iShares. iShares and Vanguard were dominating in the low-cost broad market products, and it's great to see State Street Global Advisors have success. They can have success with SPLG and SPY, as we saw in the first quarter, because SPY I think led the inflows for the month of March. It still had net outflows for the quarter, but SPLG, low cost, buy and hold, where SPY is, of course, the more tactical, short-term, institutionally oriented product. So I think it's just great to see State Street have the success that it had in the first quarter.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, seeing SPLG on the top 10 of inflows in the first quarter definitely stood out to me. I will make a quick comment going back to the covered call ETFs. I am still skeptical around this category simply because, I realize we've had some volatility here recently, but if the market keeps powering ahead, you're capped on the upside in a lot of these strategies. And I get the allure of them. What does Eric Balchunas over at Bloomberg call these? Boomer candy, right? You have income, lower volatility. I 100% get the allure. I think there's just too many of these products now on the market, and I just worry that maybe investors don't fully appreciate the risk-return profile of these, again, in particular if the market keeps marching higher. On the spot Bitcoin ETFs, obviously I've covered those ad nauseum on the show, so I don't want to go down that path, other than, again, it's very impressive to have two of the top six ETFs overall in terms of inflows be spot Bitcoin ETFs. I don't know if either of you want to comment on either of my retorts there.
I'm okay with us moving on. I think we've covered right. That in prior shows.
All right, fair enough. So, Kirsten, the other piece that you published actually today was on gold ETFs, and you noted how gold ETFs had 9 straight months of outflows through February, but demand has started to pick up over the past month or so, which I've got to tell you, this is much to my chagrin, because I had a bet with Todd that flows would pick up a long, long time ago. And I'll let Todd comment on that here in a moment. But just talk about what you're seeing around gold and gold ETFs right now.
Yeah, that's right. So gold ETFs suffered, as you mentioned, 9 straight months of outflows. But I do think, you know, it's no surprise gold ETFs gained traction with gold prices taking off as they have. We've got no shortage of geopolitical turmoil in the world right now. We have a record number of elections this year. And on top of that, we've also seen some steady hoarding of gold reserves among the central banks, plus China's retail demand, obviously the recovery story there. They don't have many alternatives, Chinese retail buyers, because both the real estate market and stocks have severely underperformed over in China. So not too many places to put their money to work. But obviously, in terms of gold flows, still seeing a lot of action in GLD. That's the Spider Gold Trust, the largest and most liquid gold ETF. But also some strong net inflows into GLDM, which is GLD's lower-cost cousin. That's Spider Gold Mini Shares Trust, GLDM. And it's a similar story with the iShares Gold Trust Micro ETF, ticker IAUM. That's the cheapest physical gold ETF on the market. So as Todd mentioned, it's a trend we've seen in broad-based equity ETFs, too. Investors are flocking to some lower-cost options, and hopefully that means more retail investors are getting involved. So it's encouraging to see that. You know, we've seen the usual ebbs and flows with the hotter inflation data and dampening hopes of Fed rate cuts, but gold itself has remained resilient, and there's still a lot of bullishness there.
You noted something really interesting in your piece, which was a State Street study finding that more millennials are embracing gold as an investment and that they prefer gold ETFs as the best way to access gold. My sense is many people would assume that millennials would be embracing Bitcoin, right? Digital gold, not increasing their interest in gold ETFs. Did that surprise you at all? What did you think of that?
Yeah, no, I did find it surprising, yes. You know, typically we think of gold as more of a traditional asset class, but I think more traditional investors still have a slight preference for owning gold bullion itself. I would say it's really the ETF revolution that has made gold more investable and safer, more accessible to younger generations. You know, 20 years ago, to own gold, you'd need to pay a commission to buy physical gold coins or gold bars, and that's on top of the cost it would take to store and to insure them. And, you know, in some cases, assay their value. So it's encouraging to see more millennials favoring gold ETFs as their preferred risk diversifiers. You know, Bitcoin is obviously an intangible asset, so something like 9 times more volatile than gold and highly speculative. But who knows? Now that we have more spot Bitcoin ETFs coming to market, we may start to see them own more of those from a tactical perspective. But I think from a longer-term strategic standpoint, only time will tell.
Yeah, the flows have been interesting to me for a long time, just around gold ETFs, because if you go back to 2022, I've talked a lot about this, gold significantly outperformed on a relative basis, and the flows didn't materialize. And so going into last year, I really thought we would see much stronger demand for gold ETFs, just given the overall environment. And then you fast forward to the beginning of this year, the flow still hadn't materialized. I think some people wanted to attribute that to the debut of the spot Bitcoin ETFs, and perhaps they were stealing some of the audience there. But I think the counter to that would be we hadn't seen flows into gold ETFs for several years. And so I don't think it was something that you could attribute to spot Bitcoin ETFs. Now, moving forward to what you were saying, I think certainly we could see spot Bitcoin ETF demand impact gold ETFs to some degree. But Todd, once again, I know you're just chomping at the bit here, because I know you want to tell listeners what will be happening on Wednesday. So I'm going to give you the floor here.
Yeah, well, Wednesday's a big day. I think, as you mentioned, there's an awards that's taking place later on, and I believe you're also going to be in town doing something at the New York Stock Exchange. But what I'm thinking about on Wednesday is how I'm going to have my steak cooked, and I'm going to have it cooked medium. And for the listeners that may recall, you and I had a bet on whether gold ETF demand would materialize in 2023. It did not. I'm sorry for that. I actually would have liked to have seen it, just not that strong demand. And we saw actually net outflows. So you will be taking me out for steak lunch. We've taken the dinner and made it lunch, but I feel good about my ability to get my money's worth out of a good meal and good conversation, and I'll leave it at that.
I'm greatly looking forward to that as well. What one thing that I'll say, like that had to be one of the worst bets that I've ever made, not because you won it. I think the threshold we had is that there would be $5 billion of net inflows into gold ETFs last year. I think we ended up having like $5 billion in outflows. That's how far off I was. Which is pretty bad. But no, I'm greatly looking forward to our lunch and settling up the bet. And you did mention I will be at the New York Stock Exchange moderating just a fantastic panel on spot Bitcoin ETFs and digital assets. We'll have Grayscale's Dave Lavelle, Bitwise's Matt Hogan, the New York Stock Exchange Exchange's Madel Legem, and then ProShare Simeon Hyman. So just a fantastic group, and it's a free online webinar. So I actually tweeted out the link to that this morning if anybody's interested. All right, Todd, so after I settle our gold ETF bet, later in the week, Vettafi will be hosting a fixed income symposium on April 18th. And you heard me mention at the top of the podcast, look, it seemed like everyone and their brother was betting on interest rates to come back in this year. And instead, at least as of now, there's actually been an uptick. And you heard me say, I think fixed income continues to be a monumental challenge for investors. I was actually looking this morning. So TLT, the iShares 20-plus year Treasury ETF, that's down about 8% this year. And it's still in the midst of like a 40% plus drawdown overall going back a few years. So basically anything with duration has been hurt somewhat this year, even if you look at broad bond ETFs like BND. But, you know, the flows tell us that investors have still been trying to play an ETF like TLT, at least over the past year or so. The other thing that I'll mention is that despite the economy looking pretty good overall, I do feel like some investors are hesitant to take on credit risk right now because they're worried about a potential slowdown at some point in the future. And so I'd love to have you perhaps touch on some of those challenges, and maybe you can tie that into previewing the VettaFi Fixed Income Symposium.
Well, I think you did a great job of showing why we're having this event and why there's almost 1,000 people who are already registered for this event. And I know we're going to have even more. People can visit ETFtrends.com for the link. This is free. It's 3 hours of 9 different sessions. We're bringing in experts to cover all of the topics you talked about, whether to take on credit risk, whether to take on duration risk, what's the Fed's next move, why could and should you turn to active management. So I'm extremely excited that I'm going to get to have those conversations with some of the leaders. I guess let me just touch on quickly what you alluded to. We had the biggest one-day jump in yield for the 10-year Treasury in, I think, over 18 months that happened when the CPI numbers came in stronger than expected. But what we keep hearing from advisors, the data is backing this up from a flow standpoint, is that taking on investment-grade credit risk and moving into intermediate-term products has been popular. That's certainly what was in the flows data that Kirsten was talking about earlier. We saw VCIT from Vanguard, SPIB, that are investment grade intermediate term bond products were popular. Meanwhile, we saw outflows for HYG. So taking on too much credit risk is not being recognized within this marketplace. So this is a challenging market. I'm excited that I and my colleagues are going to get to talk to some of the experts in the industry, from PIMCO, from American Century, from T. Rowe Price, from others to help us sort through this challenging marketplace.
Todd, something you and I have talked quite a bit about recently is actively managed fixed income ETFs. And I saw during a webcast with Fidelity in late March, VettaFi asked attendees the following question. How might your allocation to active ETFs change over the next 12 months? And the majority, 62%, said it would increase. I thought that was pretty telling, but I want to add to that something else that I thought was interesting. So Capital Group recently noted that only 12% of fixed income ETF assets are active versus 78% of fixed income mutual fund assets, which... To me, I think that lays out the opportunity for ETF issuers pretty well. I mean, that's a huge disconnect there. I'm assuming you would agree with that and maybe just talk about how active fixed income ETFs play into everything here.
Yeah, so we're certainly finding interest in active management. As we mentioned earlier, equity space saw some strong inflows during the first quarter. Fixed income ETFs or active fixed income ETFs have been around a little bit longer. That 12% is healthy, but it's certainly still a minority of this. We've seen a growing number of products that have come to market. Some of the leaders within the active world, Fidelity, PIMCO, T. Rowe Price, TCW, you mentioned Capital Group. I could go on and on of firms that now have their expertise in the fixed income marketplace now available in the ETF structure. And in most cases, they offer multi-sector strategies. So that's the best ideas. Where does the team think the opportunities arise? So we find this as much of an educational effort. It's obviously something we at VettaFi and certainly with you in your efforts are trying to support by raising a spotlight on some of these products and helping advisors and end investors see that there are these products that are out here. They're from the firms they're familiar with. They're relatively low cost, they're relatively accessible and liquid, they're tax efficient like ETFs are available. So I'm excited about this opportunity in the ETF marketplace. I think it's one of the hidden gems where we'll see a lot of white space continue to happen in the ETF marketplace. And again, many of these managers, I think more than a dozen, will be speaking on our fixed income symposium coming up.
I'm so glad you mentioned the educational efforts needed around this category, because in that same Capital Group survey that I mentioned, it found that financial professionals are allocating less than 4% of their assets under management to active fixed income ETFs. And one of the reasons was because less than half of the advisors surveyed expressed that they were very confident in understanding how to use active fixed income ETFs and client portfolios. What's interesting is that compares to roughly 7 in 10 who said they were confident with fixed income mutual funds. So to what you were saying, I mean, that's clearly an indication of the lack of understanding around some of the potential benefits that the ETF structure can offer here. And so I think you're right. I think just additional education around how to use these in the portfolio and what some of the benefits are will go a long way here. Just a few minutes left. Todd, I saw, I think you wrote a number of pieces on fixed income ETFs over the past week or two. I know leading up to this fixed income symposium, but one that stood out to me was on loan ETFs. And I'm just curious what caught your attention there enough to where you wanted to write about it.
Well, so a couple of reasons. One, we saw loan ETFs have gained in popularity this year. JAAA, which is a Janus Henderson ETF, and BKLN, which is an Invesco senior loan ETF. Both of those were in the top 20 of net inflows during the first quarter for fixed income products. So advisors, investors are embracing these loan ETFs. Loans you won't find within in the ag. So people are turning to these ETFs and bonds to get relatively low duration, taking on a bit of credit risk or in some cases more significant credit risk in order to get income. And I just find that appealing and the benefits of that. We're going to have PIMCO and Panagram talking about that at our upcoming event on Thursday. It's a marketplace that I think is less understood, but is starting to gain traction. And so I'm excited that we find another tool in the toolbox for advisors and investors to tap into in the fixed income marketplace using ETFs.
Kirsten, before I let you go, anything you would add here, whether it be on loan ETFs or active fixed income ETFs or even just fixed income ETFs in general?
Yeah, I'll just say there are a lot of indexing devotees who've obviously been skeptical of active ETFs. But, you know, as we see money continue to move from mutual funds to ETFs, there will inevitably be that subset of investors, sort of a self-selecting group who prefer to stick to and rely on those active strategies. And for fixed income in particular, given these very tight credit spreads and the Fed likely pushing off rate cuts, we'll probably see more demand for fund managers who can generate that incremental income through actively managed fixed income ETFs. But as Todd said, there's still that knowledge gap. So hopefully investors can continue to learn a lot more about these products from our upcoming symposium.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier and what I mentioned at the top. I just feel like the fixed income environment overall, even though we now have yield, which of course we didn't have 5 years ago, it's just so challenging because investors are having a hard time deciphering how the Fed's going to react to everything here, the direction of rates, what does the credit environment look like? You mentioned the extremely tight credit spreads that we have right now. And my experience just in talking to advisors over the years is that they're much more comfortable on the equity side of the equation, making, we'll say, active decisions, but not so much on the fixed income side. And so I do think that offers a nice tailwind to actively manage strategies in the fixed income space. But Todd, Kirsten, this was fun this week. I really enjoyed the conversation. Kirsten, certainly look forward to having you on the podcast more in the future. But thank you both for joining me.
Thanks so much, Nate. Great to be with you.
That was VettaFi's Todd Rosenbluth and Kirsten Chang.